Bean has arrived. She's in the main salon.
I turn around.
Then let's go.
I tuck the tiny paper inside my bell book, then press a hand to my chest, trying to get my heart to slow. The cool surface of the mirror brushes against my skin. I take a deep breath, hold it, then walk to the main salon. I am ready. Ivy sits at the edge of the room. She almost blends in with the room's trappings, like her flower arrangement. On a puffy cream settee is Princess Sabine Rottenberg. Grey and white strands snake through her dark hair. An attendant announces me. The woman whips around and leaps off the couch.
Lady Camellia!
She takes my hands and sweeps me into a hug. She smells of rose water. Your Highness? I pull back, then discreetly wipe my arms and face. Powder covers my hands.
My apologies. I've been waiting so long to see you. I had to resort to covering my skin to hide the grey, and I'm even wearing eye films. They're so painful, you know. I almost broke down and went to the chrysanthemum tea house. As I've gotten older, it pushes through so much harder.
She pats her forehead with a handkerchief.
It's disgusting, like in the old days. People would walk around court looking like rotten chicken ready for frying.
She thrusts the beauty key into my hands.
And this, before I forget.
Yes, and thank you. Bree approaches, takes the key, and fits it into a slot on a velveteen board. Princess Sabine is strikingly beautiful, despite the tiniest hints of grey. Sand-coloured skin, a perfectly sloped nose, and a rosebud mouth. She's wearing one of the fashion minister's new vivante day dresses that vary their colour every few seconds. Hers changes from gossamer to quicksilver to a stormy blue. She motions at one of her attendants, who sets up an easel with a beauty board on it. The surface is covered with courtier portraits and tiny beads from broken beauty scopes. I run my fingers across the colour swatches she's tacked onto it, and the rouge smudges smeared at the corners.
I want you to combine a few looks, she says, settling back on the settee.
Bree brings out the tea tray and she takes a cup.
My beauty consultants mocked this up. They are certain the next beauty trend will be textured hair towers, heart-shaped faces and lips, like a matched set, and freckled skin. Don't you just love freckles? And I want my waist as small as possible within the Queen's limits. After my last child, deeper bodywork around my middle just doesn't settle for long. One slice of bread too many sends me back to the bells quite often.
I nod, my head filing each request into memory. I plan to bring round waists back into fashion as they were last year. She bites her bottom lip.
I'll try that next time. For now, more freckles. Did I say that already? They're so youthful. On my nose, especially, like little ants on a log. Could you get rid of some of these wrinkles, too? And I'd like my nose smaller this time around. Don't overdo it. One time last year, a bell made my nose so small I could hardly breathe. I should never have gone to anyone other than Ivy, but I was in a pinch. I had a gala. I felt light-headed for a whole week. I had to be carried around in a palanquin. I got so tired of hiring the manpower to lift me.
She giggles. Your nose shape fits well with your face. The heart shape...
You're so kind.
She pats my hand and gulps down the rest of her tea.
Do they train you all to lie so well?
She waves the empty teacup in her hands for a servant to take away.
So I'd like to use my beauty token for the waist adjustment, and I'll pay Spintria for the other services. I'd like any eye colour close to yours. I know it's impossible to have your amber-coloured eyes, but let's try, shall we? And let's start my blonde transformation. Dark blonde, then I'll go gradually lighter to white as the snow comes. Yes, yes, that's what I'll do. My ladies will be amused. The newsies might enjoy the transformation. I'll get more press. Maybe another feature in the scopes, or better yet, a scope and a profile in the Dolce pamphlet. My husband likes darker hair, but I don't care.
She stands and marches over to the wall mirror.
Also, if we have time, could you fix my lips? They're looking very fish-like today.
Are you sure you want all of these things done at once? What about the pain?
Of course, she scoffs, then eyes me. If I could have you rebuild me from the bones out, I'd do that as well. I can tolerate it. I'm strong.
Her eyes glaze over with tears.
I'd do anything to be beautiful.
Her statement thuds inside my chest. Heavy. Maman's words echo inside me. The people of Orléans hate the way they look. She takes a deep breath and the tears vanish. We won't need all of that. We could just touch up your skin and—
Stop lying to me! She shouts. I know what I look like.
Movement in the room freezes. I bristle and look over at Ivy. She clutches her hands together in a tight, tense squeeze. I don't take a breath. Why did I question a client again? The princess places a hand on my shoulder.
I'm sorry to yell. It's just when I don't look my best, I don't feel settled inside or like my true self.
She sits up straight.
You can soften my temper while you're at it, too. I need to become nicer, sweeter. I'm a hard edge these days.
She lets out a sigh.
I'm ready. I'm looking forward to our time together.
She snaps at her attendants and they lead her off to the bathing onsen. Nerves flutter inside me like bayou fireflies. Just do what you're told, I whisper to myself, and everything will be fine. 24. I flip over the one large hourglass on the mantel in the treatment room. Sand swirls from one end to the other, keeping track of the beauty treatment time. I take deep breaths. Princess Sabine lies underneath a lace cloth. The House Orléans crest is all she wears, a tiny emerald serpent swallowing a chrysanthemum over her identification tattoo. This indicates she's a direct relative of the Queen. The pendant sits on her bare collarbone. Sabine is the first of many. There will be more men and women waiting to be changed, anticipating perfect results. There are expectations. To be better than Amber, to please Sophia, to satisfy the Queen despite being her second choice, to make the kingdom fall in love with me. The pressure curls around me like the serpent on Princess Sabine's emblem. I gaze down at her body. Her desires parade through my mind like a series of teletrope images, each more complex than the next. Servants wheel in tiered trays bursting with skin color pastilles and rouge pots, brushes and combs and barrel irons, tonics and creams, bay powder bundles, waxes and perfumes, measuring rods and metal instruments, and sharpened coal pencils. My beauty cast is set up behind me, fanned open so the medley of instruments inside twinkle in the subtle light. I think of Maman's bell book in its base, comforted by the thought that a piece of her is nearby. Tiny clusters of beauty lanterns drift over the princess like night stars. Perfect beads of light reveal the cherry red of her fluttering eyes and the grey of her skin. They highlight what needs to be done. I look at the beauty board sitting on an easel. Colour smudges streak across it and display Princess Sabine's chosen skin, hair and eye colour palette, and bodily proportions. Ivy watches my every movement. I try to be perfect. Princess Sabine, I lean forward. Are you ready?
Yes, she says. Yes, yes.
I fold back the lace and expose her greying legs. Their bodies always fade before their faces. At the end of each month, the skin color drifts away like dust caught in the wind. Please remove the hair from the princess's legs, I direct a servant. Yes, miss, she replies, coating Sabine's legs with honey-scented wax. After my client is hairless, I glide a coal pencil over her skin like it's parchment. Lines of symmetry run through the body like the architecture of beautiful buildings. It creates the perfect harmony preferred by the goddess of beauty. I mark Sabine's breasts so they will be enlarged to the size of snow melons, and move the pencil down her stomach, making a series of azure lines so as to smooth out the small depressions. I draw circles on her waist and legs to indicate spots to polish. I place a measuring lace on her face, and my hand shakes as I draw contour lines along the fabric onto the woman's nose and forehead and cheeks. I take bay powder bundles from my beauty cass and shake them over her. The white flakes coat her like flour. I use a paintbrush to spread the powder, a trick Maman taught me, to coat it evenly. "Very nice," Ivy whispers. Her compliment spurs me forward. The deep lines of the coal pencil on Sabine's stomach show beneath the powder like avenues covered with snow. I step forward. I pull out her arms and cross them over her chest. The empty weight of them feels like Maman's did before she died. "Pastilles, please," I say. Brie wheels over a cart of chafing dishes. Triangular colour blocks sit on tiered trays like a series of sugary petit cakes. They melt in glass skin-tone pots, creating every pigment imaginable. Ink black, sandy beige, eggshell white, desert brown, lemony cream, soft sable, brown sugar syrup, and more. I use a flat blade from my beauty cast to cut a slice from the ivory white and sandy beige blocks. I also take a wedge of the soft sable for the freckles. Brie hands me an empty pigment pot. I swirl the colours together until they blend into a richness that matches a sliced almond. I spread a smudge across her arm. It seeps into the dry and wrinkled folds. I identify all the smaller pigments, the rich browns and tans and whites that help make the hue bright and uniform. Maman used to make me tell her all the pigments that made up the deep red of an apple or the brown of a peanut. It was her nightly test for me while I was studying skin transformations. While the other mothers forced my sisters to trace their cursive letters, I worked on shades and spectrums. "The core of beauty is colour," Maman used to remind me when I complained about the exercises. All three arcana wake up inside me. I soften her temper. I push the colour down into her skin. I smooth away the tiny wrinkles. The woman's soft moans echo off the walls. I wipe off the paste. The colour climbs over the woman's body, changing it from pale grey to soft beige with yellowy undertones. Ivy circles me and watches over my shoulder. "Ask her if she's all right," she whispers. "Princess Sabine, how are you doing?" I say, close to her ear. She grimaces out a reply.
"I'll be fine."
I use another flat blade over her stomach. She shifts a little. I close my eyes, picturing her body. I think of her hips as a pair of overly frosted creme cakes. The tool scrapes away the layers. She squirms and sighs. I lift the blade and start to ask her if we should leave her natural shape intact. But Ivy's hand finds mine. "Keep going," she whispers. I rub the instrument across her stomach again, and it flattens with each stroke, the extra skin and bulk beneath it melting away, her waist growing smaller. She grips the edges of the table. Her knuckles whiten. I quicken my strokes. I chip away at the pelvic bones, just a pinch on each side. She cries out, "It's much more painful than usual. I can't tolerate it." "More Belrose tea should help." I wave for Brie. She approaches with a cup and helps to sit Princess Sabine up. Her stomach and hips glow red in the subtle darkness. She lifts the facial mesh and gulps down the tea.
"Why can't the royal apothecary give us something stronger to withstand it?"
My brain is a fog of nerves and worries. Ivy steps forward. "Princess Sabine, it's me, Ivy."
"Oh, Ivy."
"Yes." Ivy's soft voice puts Princess Sabine at ease. "Anything stronger than Belrose numbs the blood, Your Highness. The arcana will not work." She holds the base of Princess Sabine's teacup, helping her take larger sips. "I put Belrose elixir in this pot. It'll be a bit stronger for you." The princess's eyelids droop, and her mouth softens.
"Yes, I suppose that worked. I feel much better."
Brie helps her lie back down. "Quickly now," Ivy says to me. You're taking too long, hesitating and perfecting too much. They can't tolerate the pain in long increments, and it isn't good for you either. But she said she wanted it all at once. They always want it all at once, but we have to guide them. We have to be wiser. I nod and look up at the hourglass. Almost time for my next appointment. In my head, the rest of her beauty requests arrange like a checklist. New nose, smooth wrinkles, new eye colour, brightened skin colour, new mouth shape, freckles, smaller waist, lighten the hair, soften the hair texture, sweeten her disposition. Sweat drips down my brow. I promised Sabine I'd get it all done. My heart accelerates. My hands wobble. She clenches her teeth. The grinding is loud enough for me to hear. I rush through the changes to her face. My eyesight is blurry from fatigue. I try to hold myself still, but my legs start to give. I drop a metal rod. The room swirls into a kaleidoscope of colours. And then... darkness. Camellia! 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 My arms shake and I open my eyes. Ivy stands above me. You've done too much all at once. Princess Sabine is craning over the edge of the table, vomiting into a bucket. She screams and cries as she spews. Her skin is an angry red, like she's just stepped out of a scalding bath. Two servants drape a lacy covering over her naked body. Another holds her new honey-coloured hair up above her head. Bree tries to hold the bucket steady. I'm sorry. My head feels like it might float off, like one of the beauty lanterns. Princess Sabine, our apologies, Ivy says. Servants help Sabine back into the bathing chamber for an ice bath. Ivy reaches for me before my eyes close again. 25. The gentle warmth of a damp cloth wakes me. For a moment, I'm back at home, the bed curtains fluttering across an open window, the bayou bird's morning melody floating through the room, Maman leaning over me, her fingers sweeping back my curls, a kiss on my forehead. You'd kill yourself to be the best, she whispers in my ear. You always do too much. I reach for her hand, but my arms feel pinned to my sides. Camellia, wake up. Can you hear me? A voice calls out. Camellia! Maman's face fades away like dust. My eyes startle open. Ivy's dark veil frightens me. I try to sit up, but needles are sticking out of my arms and tubes snake through the blankets. I panic and try to rip them out of my skin. Ivy stops me. Don't. You're getting fluids. What happened? Be quiet, she whispers, then looks behind her. I don't want the nurses knowing you're up yet. She climbs onto the bed and closes the curtains. We're bathed in darkness until she lights a morning lantern and sets it afloat above us. It blinds me. What's wrong? I ask. I need you to pay attention. The beauty appointment with Princess Sabine floods back with a hot wave of embarrassment and shame. Is Princess Sabine... She's fine, in one of the recovery chambers. You pushed yourself and the Arcana too hard when you tried to rush, she says. You can't do all those treatments all at once. You must learn to refuse. You should only do three at a time, especially when you have back-to-back appointments. Your Arcana levels took a massive dip. Why didn't you tell me this when Sabine was making her demands? I thought you knew better. How low were my levels? 3.5 for mana, 3.2 for age, and 2.4 for aura, Ivy says. And it's a punch to the stomach. You've been asleep all day and night because of it. You missed your other two appointments. All day and night? I completed them for you. Thank you, I say. Adel's face unexpectedly pops into my head. And have you heard anything about my sister, Adel? It was just a rumour. She's fine. I overheard Dubarry talking to Madame Alias at the fire tea house. She said it was pure fabrication. A sense of relief washes over me, but questions remain. Adel told me in secret she was going to run away, and then there was the headline about it. What are the chances of that? Perhaps someone overheard her saying she wanted to leave, and a newsie got wind of it. I hope she'll be more careful. I try to sit up again, but I'm weak and shaky. Don't try to move. If you're too loud, the other servants will alert the beauty minister immediately. We don't get much time, she leans in, away from others. She's close enough for me to see underneath her veil a little, and she lingers there as if she wants me to. Tiny creases ring her eyes and mouth. Why would she have wrinkles? We don't age the same as the Gris. Maman had very few, even up to her death. You must pace yourself. You haven't been here a whole week yet, she says. I rest my head in my hands. I wanted her to tell the court that I gave her everything she'd asked for, I admit. I wanted to prove that I should have been the favorite from the start. You'll burn out if you overexert yourself, and you'll end up like Ambrosia. What actually happened to her? Ivy hesitates, then lowers her voice to the quietest whisper. Princess Sophia had... The bed curtains snap open. The morning lantern zips out. One of the beauty minister's servants stares at us. Oh, you're awake, the beauty minister peers in. And Ivy, what in the name of the gods are you doing in bed with the favorite? Now what if this hit the Tatlers? It'd be an incest scandal. Ivy slinks out. Just checking on her, Madam Minister. Well, go tend to something else. The nurses are here to look after her. She doesn't need additional fawning. She shoos Ivy off with a flick of her delicate wrist. How are you feeling, darling? A little tired, but better. Get her up on her feet, she orders her servants and mine. And have tea and a late lunch brought to the main salon. She needs her strength. Bree rushes forward with a smile. She removes the needles from my arms and helps me out of bed. I slip on a fur robe. My legs feel soft and rubbery and unable to support my weight. Bree holds me up. I've got you, she whispers. Thank you, I reply. I find my footing and walk behind the beauty minister into the main salon. We sit in a pair of matching chairs. You did splendidly with Princess Sabine. She's been raving about you. She leans over and kisses my clammy cheeks. You now have a month-long waiting list. Really? I didn't think it went so well. You gave her everything she wanted. She can't wait to have another session with you. Relief surges through me. And look, there's a congratulatory post balloon from Madame du Barry and another from the princess. They've left a trail of glitter through the chambers. The post balloons spit out little fireworks, one crimson and the other rose petal pink and cream. They dance around the room like children. Their ribbons swish and sweep the floor. I think of the one August sent, and the memory of his words make me smile. A shimmer of light in all this darkness. Servants pack lunch carts beside us, brimming over with cheese towers, spires of tomatoes, and piles of sweet rope bread and sliced meat. The minister nibbles, and I eat ravenously. When will I get to work with the Queen? I want to show her what I can do and prove to her that I can be who she needs me to be. The beauty minister stifles a laugh, then looks up from her teacup. Eager mouse, aren't we? You have much more work to do before that. But I have a waiting list. Patience, little love. She smiles indulgently. Eat up. You have another beauty appointment this afternoon. I do. The princess has requested you. The beauty minister taps my arm. Even though she usually waits to see how the favorite settles in, the new hair you gave her for her birthday party was quite impressive, very inventive. Landed her in the scopes for the first time. The press corps loved it. Thank you, I say, filling with equal parts excitement and worry. I wanted to please her. I hope you can continue to do so, she says. After lunch, Bree and Remy walk with me to the princess's chambers. Bree pushes a trolley with my beauty cas. Courtiers point and whisper as we pass through the palace corridors. I square my shoulders and try to feel less exhausted. A newsy post balloon hovers overhead. Remy pushes it away.
"I hate these things," he says.
"Not exciting enough for you?" I ask.
"Newspapers are pointless."
"Not all of them."
"Most of them spread lies."
"Some lies are delicious," I say. He doesn't laugh.
"Lies are as dangerous as a sword. They can cut to the bone."
Remy posts himself beside the princess's doors like a statue. He's back to his old self, the cold Remy I first met, instead of the one who tried to make poor jokes and ask me questions the night of Sophia's birthday. I sigh at him. His expression remains fixed. Bree lifts the brass knocker. Its heavy booms radiate through the chamber. A servant cracks open the door.
"Lady Camellia, welcome," she says. "We're just about ready for you."
The servant scurries to an adjacent room, leaving us alone in the chamber foyer. The jewel box room is no longer pink, cream, and gold. Cerulean walls hold golden fleur-de-lis and the princess's royal emblem. Frost-white chairs and chaises crowd around tables like swans floating on a serene pond. The servant returns for us.
"She is ready."
Fear settles under my skin and my hands quiver. But I know I can do this. I can impress her. I have to. We follow the servant into a massive treatment salon. Golden walls hug around us like we're trapped inside the sun. Cabinets burst with so many bell products, it could be the storeroom at home. Dozens of jeweled beauty lanterns leave the perfect amount of light in each corner. One can't help but be beautiful in here. Tiered trays of rouge sticks, complexion creme cakes, skin tone pots, and hair color creams wink like diamonds beneath the light.
"Camellia!"
Princess Sophia rushes forward, wearing a sheer bathing gown. She slips her hands in mine.
"I need you."
Her words sweep away the worries.
"My parents scheduled dates with my suitors, and I don't have the right look. I don't know what to do."
She clings to me like I'm her last hope of survival.
"The first one is tonight with Alexandre Dubois from House Berry."
"I'm here, Princess. We'll find the right look for you." She leans away and beams at me.
"I knew you'd be perfect."
Sophia skips over to a cart of tiered vials.
"The way you changed my hair for my birthday party was just the start. You're clever. You passed my first little test."
That was a test. "Thank you, Your Highness," I say.
"I want to become a beauty tastemaker. A queen who sets trends, unlike my mother, and it's no secret that I haven't been featured in a single beauty scope. At least, not until you came along. I swear, it's like the newsies have a vendetta against me."
She runs her fingers across the vials, plucks one filled with violet liquid, and yanks out the stopper with a loud pop.
"I brew my own Belrose elixir and mix it with other medicinal plants. The elixirs Madame du Barry supplies aren't strong enough to withstand the types of changes I want."
She drinks the entire vial, then wipes her lips. She pulls down her bathing gown and stands naked. I quickly turn around. "Your Highness."
"Oh, don't be shy. You've probably seen countless bodies before."
"Well, yes, of course, but..."
"How does mine match up?"
My stomach churns. "What do you mean?"
"As my body returns to its natural state, I wonder how it stacks up against others. I'm too scared to let it turn fully grey and see exactly what I was born with. So tell me."
"It would be inappropriate to compare, Your Highness. Plus..."
"Look at me!"
she yells, then softens.
"Just look."
Her command jolts through me. I slowly pivot. She jams her hands to her hips. Her breasts are small apples, and her stomach is smooth.
Don't you quantify us, break us into parts, tabulate what features are more beautiful than others?
Yes, but...
Then you must have an opinion.
I don't see you that way.
How noble of you. I bet Du Barry taught you to say that, to make us feel better.
I don't listen to everything Du Barry says. She smiles. I shouldn't say that. She raises a hand and wipes away my apology.
No need. I won't tell her.
She uses a footstool to climb into the treatment bed. Servants tuck her in.
I'm ready. Come.
Sophia reaches her hand out to me. I take it. She squeezes.
Make me the most beautiful, she says,
then closes her eyes. Bree drapes her face with the measuring lace. The cloth drifts up and down as Sophia takes deep breaths. I shake out the nerves in my fingers. Bree nods encouragingly. I press my hands to my stomach, then run them over the mascara cakes and pastille waxes and hair color pomades and texture wands. Sophia's breathing slows. It's so quiet in the room I can hear each inhale and exhale. I cover her with bay powder and brush it into her hair. The two-toned hair color I gave her still shines brightly. My hands tremble. I'm caught off guard. If I'd known I would be working with Sophia today, I would have planned out every single moment. Make her beauty mean something. Maman's wisdom echoes inside of me.
Are you going to begin, or just play with my hair?
Sophia says. Yes, Your Highness. My mind whizzes through dozens of looks like the spinning of a roulette wheel. Pictures of her from the Tatlers, the scandal sheets, the newspapers, and the beauty magazines. I strike certain color schemes and hair textures from consideration. I want to do something original. I close my eyes. My nerves tingle with power. The arcana stir inside me like flickering candles. The warmth moves from the bottom of my toes to the crown of my head and the very tips of my fingers. Bree helps me paint her hair with oil black hair cream, then streak it with red. I plunge my hands into the strands, pushing the color through it. I wrap a tendril around a rod to give her the perfect coil and mix two skin tones together, seashell white and dark citrine brown, the skin colors her parents each chose for themselves. Not a drop of sweat appears on her face. Coal pencil marks map the changes I'll make. Higher cheekbones like her mother's, a button nose like her father's, and deep, sloping eyes. I resist the urge to do more, remembering Ivy's warning and what happened last time. Your Highness, I whisper.
Yes,
she replies. I'm finished.
So quickly? You didn't do any body work?
I wanted to be sure I was headed in the right direction first. Sophia springs up.
Bring the full length.
She slips back into her bathing gown. I wait for her praise, craving it like a hot lunar pastry. Three servants march forward with a gilded mirror. She eyes herself, running her hands through her hair and over her skin, then leans close to the glass, inspecting her new cheekbones and nose. She bats her eyes, then pivots to see her profile.
I look too much like my mother.
I did that on purpose, since the Queen is incredibly beautiful. I search her face for any trace of happiness.
I know she's beautiful, but I don't want to look like anyone else. I want to look like no one in the entire kingdom.
She studies her naked body.
Try again, favourite. And give me larger breasts, the size of grapefruits. They always seem to shrivel down by the middle of the month. Also, a creaseless eyelid. Those are trendy now.
The air streams out of me like a crumpled post balloon. She gulps down another vial of Belrose elixir. Her servants help her back onto the treatment bed. I take a deep breath. Bree hands me a square of chocolate and whispers, "For strength," she winks, "and patience." I smile at her. "Thank you." The chocolate dissolves on my tongue, and I think about the pounds of the stuff we devoured in the lesson rooms. I remember when Du Barry paired us up to change our very first person. In our lesson rooms, we'd stood beside the beds, and Penelope, the kitchen sous chef, had lain across mine. Hannah and I held hands as we gave her a new hair color, eye color, and skin tone. But it all turned out brassy orange and took 3 more tries to get it right. Du Barry had fed us chocolate squares to help us maintain our stamina. I erase Sophia's new skin color and make her beige as a crepe. I use a hand iron to press out the coil in her hair and give her strands as straight as a board. I add a teardrop curve to her eyelids and take away the crease. I add 13 tiny freckles to a new, slender nose. I use metal tongs to pull at her skin to add volume to her breasts and curvature to her waist. She looks like Hannah. It makes me miss my sister. Sweat drips down my cheeks. Bree hands me a glass of water, which I drink down in one gulp. "I'm finished," I say. She jumps out of bed and goes straight to the mirror again, examining herself from all angles. "The breasts are perfect, and I like the hips, but..." She pivots to face me. "I've never liked dark hair." She fingers her waist-long strands. "It was always my mother's and sister's preferred shade." Sophia kisses my cheek. "You are strong, yes?" "The strongest," I say. She giggles. "Let's try again. I'm not quite satisfied." I force a smile and turn my back to her, pretending to rifle through a cabinet of Bell products. Sophia gulps down another vial of Belrose elixir and climbs back onto the treatment bed. I press my hand to my stomach, trying to slow my breathing. Exhaustion seeps into every part of me. I wave Bree over. "Bring me my leeches, please, and quickly."
"Yes, my lady."
She scurries off. I run my fingers across glass pots, opening and closing compacts as if I'm preparing, until Bree returns moments later. She opens the porcelain jar, flashing its slimy contents. I reach my fingers in and grab a leech. It writhes within my grip. I hook the creature around the back of my neck. Its tiny teeth bite the skin. I wait to feel the tingle of its secretions pumping into me. I steel myself and return to Sophia's bedside. I mix a new skin color, rich pearl white and buttermilk. I recreate the same two-toned hair color with a deep scarlet and ash blonde. I give her my mother's face, thin sloping nose, light brown freckles, a pink bow of a mouth. In my current state, my mother's visage is all that will come to me. "Done," I say, almost out of breath.
"A looking glass," Sophia says.
Her attendant holds the hand mirror over her, and she smiles.
"This is perfect for now. A good start."
Sophia's eyes bob open and shut.
"I've had too much Belrose elixir to do this any more."
Her attendants help her shimmy into a robe and out of the room. When the doors close behind her, I collapse forward onto the treatment bed.
"Are you all right, my lady?"
Bree asks, but my mouth is too tired to open. She helps me into a chair. The overuse of the arcana dulls my senses. The room feels thicker around me, and I feel too thin to be part of it. My legs shake and coat with sweat. My limbs are light as feathers, ready to drift off in the wind. She hands me a cup of spicy cayenne tea and another sliver of chocolate, and adds a leech to each wrist. I close my eyes and sink into a nap. Bree jostles my shoulder.
"Lady Camellia, it's time to go. Do you feel better?"
I stumble awake. "Yes. How long was I asleep?"
"An hourglass's worth of time."
We walk out of the treatment salon. My legs are more like putty than bone. Bree's cart rattles behind me. I have to think about each step, willing my feet to move. The boudoir doors snap open. Remy is waiting in the same spot I left him. His dark eyes hold concern.
Do you need help?
No, I'm fine. The edges of the hall fade into a haze. Bree hands me another square of chocolate.
I'll meet you back at your room, she reassures me,
then heads off in the direction of the servants' lifts. Remy offers me his arm.
Where are you running off to?
A voice says. It's Auguste. 26. Auguste leans against one of the marble columns, thumping at a dying night lantern. His hair is out of its usual knot, in a mess around his shoulders. Freckles create a trail across his cheeks. He wears a betrothal pin on his lapel, a reminder that he's one of the princess's suitors. An unexpected shiver rushes through me. I pull my shoulders back, open my eyes wide, and try to feel and look less exhausted. He smiles and stares as if he's waiting for me to say something first. I bite the inside of my cheek and fuss with my hands, if only to have something to do. What are you doing here? Is all I can manage.
I can't be in the hall, he replies. I meant... You thought I was waiting for you, he says.
I didn't say... I'm not tracking you, if that's your concern. He shifts position, moving closer. Remy steps forward, his jaw clenched. His hand goes to the dagger at his side.
Not to worry, Auguste says. I don't plan on harming her.
I scoff. Auguste smiles. He points at Remy.
Serious, this one is.
I stifle a laugh.
Maybe she's following me, he tells Remy.
Remy doesn't laugh. His grimace deepens. I just came from a session with the princess, I say.
Well, aren't you lucky?
Tired is more like it. I move closer to Auguste, away from Remy. It feels like I've stepped into a bubble with him. The hall's grand staircase and white marble columns vanish. Nearby courtiers melt away. Remy turns into a statue. The rules DuBarry made me swallow down about fraternizing with men and boys outside of beauty work vanish. It's just the two of us talking, and it feels both deliciously terrifying and fascinating. I am a tangle of giggles and distractions and delirium. I should be back in the Bell apartments. I should be checking my arcana levels. I should be resting after hours of beauty work.
Did you get the post balloon I sent? He asks.
Oh, yes. That memory is still warm.
Well, aren't you going to say thank you? Or send me one in return?
I snort and immediately feel my cheeks redden. You sent it yesterday morning, so you haven't given me much time.
Take a walk with me.
I fight back a smile and try to frown.
Why should I?
Why shouldn't you?
You're a stranger, and
you know my name. I'm Auguste Fabry, dreadful son of the Minister of the Seas. We've met before. We're best friends, even though I suspect you don't like me much. Plus, I sent you a post balloon.
I've received many post balloons. Am I supposed to walk with every single sender?
Aren't you popular?
I am. Didn't you hear?
Hear what?
I lean in and whisper. I'm the favorite.
Is that so?
His mouth breaks into a dimpled smile.
I haven't heard. I must be living at the very edge of the world.
You must be, I say. At the kingdom's rock barrier, for sure. He laughs. I laugh. Our eyes meet for a brief second, and then I look away. Excitement bubbles up in my chest like I'm an overflowing champagne flute. My mouth, once tired, now can't stop moving. Remy clears his throat. The bubble pops. Well-dressed courtiers step out of the glittering chariots that lift people from one palace floor to another. Imperial servants carry trays in and out of rooms. Newsies send their black gossip post-balloons and navy story post-balloons through the halls, hoping to catch a snippet of something for the newsreels and tatlers and scandal sheets. People lift spyglasses to their eyes and slide ear trumpets from their pockets.
"Take a walk with me," August asks again.
And even with the world come to life around us once more, I nod. I can't seem to help myself.
"You're easy to convince.
I can just as easily return to my apartments."
"No, come."
He offers his arm, but I shake my head.
"Right. Those rules again. I thought you said you didn't follow them."
"I don't, but just because I don't want to take your arm doesn't mean I'm following protocol. Maybe I'm worried you're carrying sickness. Or maybe you don't smell very nice."
He sniffs himself. "I'll be sure to wear cologne next time so I don't smell like sea in the pier market."
"You don't smell like..." "I didn't want you to take my arm anyway," he smirks. I roll my eyes and we walk out of a smaller palace exit. Remy trails us. The burn of his gaze on my back is like the warmth of a candle too close to your skin. One of the topiary arcades that leads to the palace gardens holds peekaboo flowers that wink light. Night lanterns shine bright as the watching moon. The glow clings to the curved hedges arched over us and skims the surface of the palace river ahead. Gem-bright birds perch in dangling cages and lend their sweet songs to silent garden nooks.
"How does it feel to be back at court?"
His questions always feel like challenges.
"It's great," I say,
but Amber's face flashes in my head.
"I never liked court much. I was lucky to be at sea with my father most of the time. He's grooming me for a boring life on a boat."
"Is that not what you want?"
"It's what my father wants," he says. "Did you always want to be a belle?"
"Yes. I don't know what it would mean to be anything else."
"Didn't you ever wonder?"
"No." He frowns, as if that's an incorrect answer to his question.
"What else is there?" I say. "Ordinary life." "What is that?" I say with a laugh. "And who would want that?" "You could be a famed courtier, only having to worry about dresses and gossip and landing in the scopes and papers."
"I'd rather have the responsibilities that I have," I say. "The duty."
"What if someone found a way to cure us?" he asked. "An elixir that could be bottled and could make everyone beautiful. Wouldn't your life be easier?"
A searing anger fills every part of me. What I do, what my sisters do, could never be bottled.
"I didn't mean to offend. It's just, I like to lead a carefree life. I suppose being on the water fosters that sort of temperament. The god of the sea has no allegiances."
"You shouldn't assume everyone wants that," I snap.
"You're right."
Then his eyes narrow and he leans toward me.
"There's something on your neck."
August touches a forgotten leech. He jumps back with a shout.
"What is that disgusting thing?"
"It's just a leech. Are you afraid?" I tuck it back into its hiding place beneath a neck ruffle on my dress.
"Why do you have that?"
He looks a tad green. "Another secret of the bells."
"A horrifying secret."
"They help reset our arcana and purify our blood. And don't insult the Sangsu." His eyebrows lift with curiosity. I realize I've said too much. Dubarry's voice thunders inside me.
"Don't reveal the secrets of the bells."
The heat of my mistake lingers in my stomach.
"Clear the way,"
an attendant calls out. 4 imperial servants carry a windowed palanquin. Its golden edges shine like a trapped sun in the early evening darkness. Inside rests the sleeping Princess Charlotte on an embroidered pillow. A veiled woman wearing a crown walks alongside the palanquin, with her hand resting on the glass. A group of newsies trails closely behind. "Where are they taking her?" I ask. "And who is that woman with her?"
"The princess is," August starts to say. "Princess Charlotte takes the air every evening around this time." "That's her bell, Arabella," Remy interrupts. "We should be going, Lady Camellia. I've received word that dinner has been served in your apartments, and Madame du Barry awaits.
Reality crashes back in like a heavy ocean wave. Thank you for the walk, I say to Auguste.
I'm sad it's over so soon.
He smiles handsomely. My cheeks flame again. Good night.
Good night, he says. And don't forget to write me back. I'm waiting. I expect a response.
Yes, all right. I follow Remy back inside. His footsteps clomp. I start to thank him for not insisting I return immediately to the Bell Apartments. I know it can't be exciting to follow me around all day. Not when you're used to defending a kingdom or training for battles. But the words get stuck, and by the time we're back and he's taken his stance outside the doors, the moment seems lost. Dinner carts sit in the main salon, chock full of steaming hot food. Bree greets me.
Where have you been?
I went for a walk. She removes the leech from my neck and helps undo my waist sash.
You're blushing, and your skin is all warm, she smiles. Also, a post balloon arrived for you several hours ago from the Chrysanthemum Tea House. I tied it to your desk.
I leap toward my bedroom.
Your dress is half unbuttoned,
she yells out with a laugh. A magenta post balloon floats over my desk. The Chrysanthemum Tea House emblem glimmers on its side. I open the back and fish for the letter inside the compartments. My fingers fuss with the fold. My heart thuds. I drop the note, then scoop it back up.
Camille, I'm sorry too. And I'm all right. I miss you. Be careful. Amber.
I turn the letter over. Pastel colours make a series of lines. Another message reads,
I think Adel has escaped. An Imperial investigator came to the tea house looking for her, but some of my clients told me that beauty work continues there. Do you know what is happening?
27. The bed curtains snap open. Night lanterns float in, their light glaring down on me. I cover my face. After tossing and turning, worrying about Adel, I feel as though I've just now fallen asleep and it couldn't possibly be morning.
What is it?
A sleepy-eyed Bree stares back.
You've been summoned.
By whom? I rub my eyes. What time is it?
Her Highness, Princess Sophia.
She pulls back the blankets.
And it's 2 hours after the midnight star.
Why?
Her first servant, Cherise, didn't say.
Bree drapes a fur-lined robe over my shoulders, and I step into slippers.
She said the princess wants you to come as you are.
I fuss with my hair, removing the silk scarf and trying to pull the mess of frizzy curls up into a bell bun.
Come quickly. She's in a foul mood and does not like to wait.
Bree rushes me out of the Bell Apartments, where Remy awaits me. Good evening, I say.
Actually, it's good morning, he corrects.
I sigh.
Do you know how annoying you are?
My older sister told me often.
He walks ahead. I've memorized the way to Sophia's apartments, but we go in the opposite direction, toward the south wing of the palace. We pass grand ballrooms and glass solariums and ornate parlors.
Where are we going?
I ask Remy.
Where I've been instructed to take you.
And you wonder why I don't like having you around.
He stops and faces me.
I was trying to joke with you.
Well, you're terrible at it.
I'll try harder next time.
He stalks ahead again.
The princess requested you come to her private workshop.
Do you know why?
They don't pay me to know, just to follow orders.
Thick black doors shine bright with the House of Inventors emblem, a chrysanthemum growing out of a stacked tower of cogs and gears. A trio of Imperial guards block the entrance. Remy salutes, they step aside, and he takes his place beside them. The doors open. Enormous shelves scale the walls and split into hundreds of balconies. Books choke every spare place. silver-grey work lanterns dangle over long tables. Their surfaces are scattered with beakers, tubes, droppers, spoons, a set of mortars and pestles, and graters. A caged cat-like animal with blonde fur and black spots purrs. There are baskets full of flower petals, and a monstrous stove in the corner releases tiny clouds of steam. The shelves are lined with apothecary bottles that twinkle like jewels, as well as clear jars and magnificent flasks containing resins, balms, waxes, and oils made from flowers, plant secretions, and extracts. Powder puffs, brushes, and pots of rouge sit like macarons on a sweets tray. Sophia is peering into two flower terrariums, tapping her fingers against the glass. One contains bloodroot, a flower with white petals and a yellow center. The other holds pale pink and white blooms in starry clusters. Mountain laurel. She coos at the flowers as if they're teacup pets. Her hair is a static-filled cloud around her shoulders. Her pale skin is flushed pink with anxiety. She still looks like my mother, and I regret the decision. It turns my stomach.
Camellia,
Sophia rushes forward. Her nightgown sweeps behind her like a tail.
I want to show you something special.
She smells like sweat and salt. The whites of her eyes are bloodshot.
My favorite.
She takes my hand and drags me merrily forward, like she's one of my sisters and we're headed to lessons, or breakfast, or to sneak off someplace we aren't supposed to go.
I need your help again.
A part of me is thrilled to be the one to help her. This is what I wanted. We pass the terrariums.
Do you know much about plants? She asks.
Yes. We mostly study them for shading, pigment work, and for bell products.
Flowers are so underrated.
She gazes up at the ceiling.
Only coveted for their beauty when they can help solve so many problems.
She tugs me forward to a large table overflowing with piles of tattlers, beauty pamphlets, and scandal sheets. Torn-out pictures are pinned to boards. Eyes, legs, breasts, hair, body shapes, faces. Beauty casses sit in rows, their contents on display. Sophia leads me to a beauty board on an easel. Two identical women stare back. White blonde hair, pear green eyes, dark brown skin, and sweetheart mouths.
These are my cousins, Anouk and Anastasia.
She runs her fingers over their faces.
They only allow themselves to have tiny differences between each other. You have to search for them.
They're beautiful, I say.
Exactly the problem.
I bristle.
I've been watching them these last few days, tracking their beauty work. They've just come from a vacation in the Silk Islands and from seeing your sister, Padma.
Tracking their beauty work?
Oh, I haven't shown you my masterpiece.
She tugs a series of braided cords that dangle along the wall, and a tapestry lifts back, revealing a complete wall of rose porcelain portraits, set in a curling network of brass tubing. Every spot and corner is filled. Each one is labelled with a titled name and royal emblem. A gentle whoosh of liquid snakes through the tubes. A few of the portraits change. Hair grows shorter or longer, noses shrink, skin tones flush over with enhanced or brand new colours, hair textures morph, mouths plump up.
I reach for one. Don't touch, Sophia warns. They're very sensitive.
What are they?
It's how I see everybody.
She admires them.
How beautiful my court is.
But how? My stomach clenches.
It's a secret.
She takes my hand and squeezes it.
Can I trust you?
Yes. My heart gallops. Sophia returns to the table and opens one of the beauty casses. Velvet boxes hold ornate bracelets and teardrop earrings and necklaces dripping with gold and gems.
One of my royal inventors made these for me. Remember when you first came to my toilette ritual, on my birthday, and I handed out jewelry?
I nod, recalling how her